Love, like a carefully loaded ship, crosses the gulf between the generations. Camille Dungy writes of love and of fear, a shirt my mother gave me, a memory of her. Learning from other women the way that her own ancestors and the way her own distant relatives would have and do carry their babies. Conspiracy. Con meaning with and spirit meaning breath. Conspiracy, to breathe with. So close. And the fear too, though, to be mistaken as my own child's nanny, to be spat upon, to be destroyed. Intergenerational trauma, it is called, and it is real, a memory carried in the bones. So is intergenerational resilience, also real, a way of holding on, of laughing, of being together. So is intergenerational love. That's very real. The way that our rituals, our inheritances, our stories are carried forward like the parts of a patchwork quilt, a warm love made by stories. We live not by things, but by the meanings of things. When we talk about the beloved community, we often talk about it in the present tense. And that makes sense. It's important to live in the here and the now, but the beloved community is larger than that. It goes up and down, if you will, in time. It extends through time to generations that come before and to generations that come after, like a carefully loaded ship. This does not happen in the abstract, but in the very real, in the concrete rituals, quilts and habits and stories and recipes passed on from generation to generation. Things you do you don't even know that you do, but then you see a picture of your great-grandfather holding his pipe the same way that you hold your pen, and you think, what is this? As the poet notes, and as Robert Fulghum notes in his reflection, this is complicated. There is both fear and joy. There is love and pain. There is presence and absence, and the cultivation of a certain kind of memory. And there is hope for the kind of parent, the kind of grandparent, the kind of aunt or great uncle or neighbor we might be, an intention, one hopes, to pass along what was good and to not pass along what was not good. I had a professor in seminary, John Collins was his name. He spoke with a thick Irish brogue. He had a big white beard and was every casting director's dream of a Bible scholar. He often remarked on a passage from Numbers when Moses, speaking to God, asked God to be merciful to the Israelites. Fleeing Egypt and the Pharaoh, their behavior in the desert had been less than ideal. Chalk it up to intergenerational trauma. They'd fought with each other, being greedy, and made a golden calf. You remember that part of the story. God was tempted to kill them all, wipe them out. But Moses said, God, if you kill them all, then the Egyptians will think less of you. That you brought them out of Egypt, but then you failed to deliver them. So God reconsiders. And I love this story. God is concerned about God's reputation among the Egyptians, who knew they had such leverage. Moses says, look, of course, the sins of the fathers will be visited on the sons for three generations. But then really that should be it. So God doesn't allow the Israelites to reach the promised land that generation, but he lets their children get there. Moses himself, remember, dies on the shore and cannot cross. Three generations and that's it. That's the promise Moses extracts from God. And Professor Collins says, listen, it's not a curse, a description of reality. We have to unpack and deal with and grow from the heritages we are handed on. Our ancestors did things that caused harm, perhaps. Perhaps they suffered harm. probably some of both. We ourselves inherit complicated legacies. Some are very complicated. Some inherited legacies that are so complicated they never, ever come to church on this, the second Sunday in May, for it's too hard. Some were blessed enough to receive mostly strength, wisdom, and care. Those of you who are in that boat, you are blessed, and I think and I hope you know how lucky you are. And give thanks for that. Because if it can't be real in church, where can be real? This is real. Because of the beloved community of generations into which we are born or adopted or find ourselves or in which we are still seeking, perhaps, because of its strengths and weaknesses, because of what we know makes life good and what we know makes life harder than it needs to be, we are often moved to do better for the generations that are to come. I am very intentional about the parts of parenting that I receive that I want to duplicate and the parts that I want to do differently. I don't always succeed in those intentions, but I try. I think this is human, right? This is you too. We try to load the ship carefully with love that it might stay afloat long after we are gone. We try to paddle gently with care so that we might not tip over. We breathe with the baby, a conspiracy of love. And we can be brought into awareness of a love larger than what we can see from generations before. Who knew that someone like us might come along but never knew us in the flesh? And to generations that will come after, we can imagine, but we will never know. It's humbling when you think of it that way. It's a powerful feeling, that longing to extend the beloved community, to strengthen it beyond our own circle of relations to something more than us. Powerful feeling. To remember that we are shaped by forces and choices from generations past, and thus our choices will partially shape the lives of those that come generations after. It extends that feeling of beloved community into the past and the future, backward and forward, or up and down, if you will, through time. When our sense of kin, those who are our parents, our children, our relatives, expands through these generations. It was the insight then of Julia Ward Howe and others to say that that feeling of familial love, of protective longing, of fierce care is not just for our own children. Not just for our own generations, not just the product of our own veins. We women of one country will be too tender to those of another country to allow our sons to be trained to injure theirs. Julia Ward Howe, Unitarian abolitionist, poet, and lecturer, leveraged the cult of motherhood for the cause of peace. She took the rhetorical space that was offered to her and occupied it with force. She made the claim that beloved community should not just extend backward and forward through time, but wider through space. Until, as Elizabeth Alexander, the Unitarian Universalist composer of today's anthem, wrote, "There are no other people's heartaches, no other people's injuries, no other people's children." There are no other people's children. That is a moral claim of the highest order. You are my neighbor. You are my beloved. That's a claim of love. Not the sentimental, weak love of distant affection, the love that thinks that babies are cute but doesn't care about their mother's health. Not that. No, the fierce love of justice, the love that motivates action. There are no other people's children. The United States is the worst, by far the worst, at maternal mortality, 3 times larger than the next developed country. There are no other people's children. In this city that we live in, children face malnutrition and abuse and lead poisoning and neglect. Is it true? There are no other people's children? Do we believe that? Does it make us do anything different? Can we breathe together? A conspiracy of love, a conspiracy of justice, a conspiracy of hope. What would it mean to draw the circle wider and to decide that there were no other people's children in the world? How might we decide to treat the families gathered in Tijuana waiting? Happy Mother's Day. If you cross, we'll put your children wherever. How might we think about the people of Syria longing for peace? How might we consider the fates of children we've never met but who knew well the munitions stamped made in the USA? How might we think about children and families closer to home, kids not half a block from here who know to watch out for syringes in the grass, whose parents were never offered the shortcuts and cultural currency that some but not all of us take for granted? How might we think about those who are trying to get on track but keep getting blocked over and over again? How might we think about the 2-year-old has trouble speaking, but the backlog for a speech therapist is a full year? Access to a car is touch and go, even if you get an appointment. How might we think about the teenager who doesn't really understand why working hard matters when they can't afford even community college anyway? Why bother? These are the children and the families and adults that I think about. My particular gift in the world is structural thinking and planning and being an obnoxious prophet. I'm really good at being obnoxious in a room of powerful people. Some of you know this, you've been in that room with me, and still getting invited to the next meeting. I don't know why they keep inviting me to the next meeting, but they keep doing it. It's a fine line, and well, we all have our gifts. That's mine. So on your behalf and with your support, I'm spending time trying to get agencies in Rockford to align and connect their services for children and families in ways that are more effective, just, and useful. That's one way. At our last Social Justice Council meeting on Wednesday, the team enthusiastically agreed to form a partnership with Just Breathe 815, a program that serves teens and especially homeless teens, drop-in center, programming here at the church, clothing and necessities, and most of all, love. Their executive director, Kevin Ware, spoke about how what these kids need most is a sense of their own worth. That's what's been stolen from them. The sense that they matter to someone, that there are no other people's children. So we're going to be part of that. I know that some of you are teachers, and I know that you're counting 10 days to go, because it's hard and exhausting. No doubt about that. But some of you are living every day the commitment to that beloved community, to care and to love and to teach and to try again, no other people's children. Social workers, foster parents, librarians, professors, tutors. Maybe one of those is your gift. Maybe what you can do is go to the shelter care fundraiser and open your wallet. Maybe what you can do is call your congress member or your state representative every single day. Maybe you've got that persistent skill. If you want to make a difference, you can call your state rep every day until a budget is passed that fully funds early childhood and community health centers statewide. Don't even have to leave your house to do that. Which is to say, there are a lot of ways to live out this principle that there are no other people's children, to help and be of good use to build the beloved community. Whatever way we do this, though, I hope that we do not do this in a colonial way. This is a tricky part and, frankly, worthy of a whole other sermon. Some of you have heard that sermon, too. I hope we do not do this in a way that dehumanizes in its pity or engages in what is sometimes called poverty pornography. that we do not do this in a way that takes away agency, but instead encourages it. Not in a way that sees only struggle, but in a way that honors resilience. In short, in a way that loves, not controls. Those are not the same thing. That loves the other for their own sake, and not to gratify our ego or ease our conscience. The analogy to parenting here is very strong, that we should love our children for their own sake and not because of what they do for us. It doesn't always work that way, but it should. There are a lot of ways to live out this theological commitment, but we are not called to be bystanders. Today is a day to celebrate the way that love crosses the gulf between the generations and to thank those who have loved us into being. But that's not enough. It's good. It's not enough. It's also a calling. Let the call go out throughout the land. Let the summons be heard. Everyone is kin. No one left out. No child left behind is a great slogan. What would it be like if we actually lived it? Whatever your gift is, how can you put it toward this work? How can you expand your love to a larger and larger view? How can you help build the beloved community that goes wider than we have yet imagined? For each child that's born, a morning star rises and sings to the universe who we are. What would it mean to believe this? That every child is our child? That every child is sacred? That the call to carefully load the ship is our calling, that everyone, without exception, deserves a place aboard. How might your words, your actions, your heart be changed when you remember that for each child that's born, a morning star rises? Maybe this is about the work you are already doing. May you heard these words as a blessing for you. And I hope you do, for I bless you. You are already in the fields, planting love and justice. Maybe you heard this as a summons to generosity, to service, to connection. Then I hope you do so, that you answer this call to life. Maybe you hear this as a reminder of what you already know, but sometimes forget. May you be recalled to your best life. Maybe you heard this as a challenge to mend your ways. May the mending be loving and true. And maybe you hear this as a song in your own heart. For when we say that each child is a song to the universe, that everyone deserves love and justice, we mean you, too. You who think we don't mean you, we mean you. You too are sacred. You too are beautiful. You too are a song to the universe. You too deserve a place aboard the ship of love. You too are in the circle. You too have gifts to share. Don't forget. May all of us and all the world feel a love larger than time and larger than space. Amplify that love, shape it toward justice, be celebrated for the wonder that we are, celebrate others for the wonder that they are. Feel loved, love others. Hope, dream, and keep loving this day and every day. Amen. We're going to sing together 212. We are dancing Sarah's Circle. Note the change of the words from your hymnal to what's on the screen. We'll sing family neighbors instead of sisters, brothers. Let's rise together in body and spirit and sing. Thank you. So the second verse is, "We here we seek and find our history," repeated three times. And then the third verse is the next line, okay? So we're going to pick up with, "We will all do our own naming." I'll extinguish the chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These things we carry with us until we are together again. While I do that, I invite you to join hands if you wish, or stand near each other, place your hand on the shoulder for our blessings and benediction. Before our benediction, I'll remind you that the children's choir will rehearse after the service today and at 9:45 next week before they sing as part of Music Sunday, so make sure the kids come, and it's an easy song, so if they've not come, they can come next week and learn it. We need voices. The words of our benediction from the Reverend Fred Gillis. May the love which overcomes all differences, which heals all wounds, which puts to flight all fears, which reconciles all who are separated, be in us and among us, now and always. We'll sing together our closing blessing. We'll sing it through twice.